I think it's probably a good time to start broadcasting tonight here. Welcome to No Driving Gloves. It's your Thursday evening entertainment. We checked the ratings last week, and we were ahead of the political parties that were speaking during our show. They've got to learn not to schedule these debates and speeches and things opposite No Driving Gloves. People might pay attention to us. But how are you two doing this evening?
I'm doing great, John. Another Thursday night on No Driving Gloves and hanging out with the wonderful hosts of the show and, of course, our wonderful No Driving Gloves community that's out there. Hoping for a lot of good comments again tonight like we had last week.
Get some people jumping in here and talking about recipes, right?
Well, recipes and, I mean, just generally like eating in your car and related to your car. I told my wife about this topic and she's like, that's not a car topic. And I advocate that it is. So I look forward to proving my case on the matter.
Oh, that is such an easy case to make. And you're a lawyer. That's even easier.
Well, yes, non-practicing.
Well.
But yes, still technically, I keep my law license current. I know these things. They inform my everyday life. And they've made every penny of the student debt that I'm still paying back worth it.
Can't you just eventually give up on that? Just pay as little as you can and hope you die before. It just becomes hopeless.
I don't have another option. That's all I can pay is as little as I can.
Yeah. You
That's
make
the
your
glory 16, of going into
$16 a month. $16 a month loan payment, and it builds up at about $148 a month in interest.
Yeah, except it's about 20 of those $16 a month payments. Yeah. It's like another heating bill or mortgage payment, and it's not even the full amount that they're technically entitled to because I'm too poor. You know, I did not have the OR to even pronounce. Yeah, that's we can't afford
it.
Can't even afford the whole word. I've seen that before.
And I
did not
find
that.
Talk
I rip
about,
off all my good stuff.
Yeah, and that's why we're going to talk about cheap food in your car.
Yeah, before we get into that, I know people, actually, I was texted about it, and that's how I was alerted because I don't read their emails anymore. And I did see the CRX on Bring a Trailer, and I know I have committed to trying to locate one. But personally, I thought that went for stupid money at $41,300, roughly. And it wasn't, to me, that nice a car. You know, 9 years deferred maintenance, aftermarket pieces on it. I mean, it was a nice CRX, and expense is proportionate to income. That's what I've always said. I mean, if you make $1 million a year, a $20 pizza is not a lot. But if you make $10,000 a year, $20 pizza, you know, eats into your budget a little bit. So, yes, I did see it. I could really get into it long and drawn out, but I did see the CRX, and thank you for people alerting me that it was available. I'm looking more in probably the four figures, and reading through the comments there seem to be a lot of CRXs that people think should be in the four figures. Somebody did mention one with like 108,000 miles they had. They were thinking of selling with a touch of rust on the fender. And I'm going, oh, you know, okay, that one I could see, you know, paying $6,900, $7,900 for. But so I did touch on that. Is there any quick little car stuff you guys want to get off your chest? Or we'll just jump right back in and learn how to.
I have something to get off my chest. I don't know what CRX stands for. I don't even know what that significance of that car is. I remember seeing them in traffic years ago, but I was not focused on late model stuff.
There is CRX doesn't stand for anything. They always said it's
can't
like
remember an, X.
It's like experimental or something. But no, CRX, Honda's always said never stood for anything. ironically, in 1988, when they introduced the second generation CRX, the first ad it appeared in, it was it and the new, brand new stealth bomber. And it's the first time the stealth bomber ever appeared in a public picture, was with the overhead shot of it in the CRX. A little bit of CRX trivia for you. But they were just fun little lightweight two-seat cars. They were introduced in 84 as a derivative of the Honda Civic. In 88, they became actually their own model. So they were cheap to insure. The HF models always from 84 to the end of production in 91, 50 miles a gallon, 55 miles a gallon. They get better gas mileage than a Prius to this day. Very reliable. You get the SI model at the time, 108 horsepower. They were just fun, lightweight cars to bounce around in. I mean, they weigh 2,000 or so pounds. And I go, I don't know if I could drive a 2,000-pound car anymore because my little Fiesta thing gets thrown around on the interstate. I was driving through some rain in Columbus, Mississippi yesterday, and the wind gusts were so strong on the bridges and the rain was so hard, it was actually kind of making me change lanes. Kind of rough there, but kind of bothered me. But I did have the most pleasant drive yesterday morning. And I left Scottsboro, Alabama, was heading up to Columbia, Tennessee, and decided to do it all two-lane back roads. Very little interstate got involved. And it was nice. It was pleasant. Not a lot of traffic. And I never noticed it. And you guys will probably attest to this and go, you're stupid, John. I found driving on these little two-lane roads that are all covered by trees and up through the mountains and that was a hell of a lot cooler and more comfortable than driving on the interstate where there's no shade or anything and the air conditioning's working overtime. And I don't know. I just found it yesterday. I had the whole day was nice, pleasant drives. Really felt good. Would have been nice to have a convertible. But there, I've deviated way too much now.
No, that isn't that what no driving gloves is about? Like that we deviate, that we might get off topic before we even get on topic. And no, I've got to say, John, because you brought up the driving on two lane back roads, like when I travel, I try to do that when I can, when I don't have deadlines, things like that, that I've got to meet. But one of the interesting, maybe cool things about having little kids right now is they fall asleep in the car when it's like they need a nap. And then it's a great excuse. No, it's a great excuse, right? Because you're coming home from somewhere, they fall asleep. Well, you're not going to come straight home and wake them up and have them be grouchy, right? So, you know, there's some really nice back roads in this part of Kentucky and Tennessee, this area of Kentucky and Tennessee. And this past weekend, bringing the kids home from, I don't remember what we were doing, but they fell asleep. Actually, no, it was just me and my son. He fell asleep literally on the 10-minute drive back from the Lowe's where we went to pick up a few things. And I basically sent a text to my wife and was like, he's asleep. We're going for a drive. And for like the next probably hour and 15 minutes, I drove back roads. And it was absolutely amazing. I loved it. And of course, it gives me an opportunity to look at old barns and look for cars stuffed away places. So one of these days, I'll find another car.
Yeah, that's one thing I always enjoy. I do kind of the same routes all the time. That Scottsboro to Columbia was a new route. And, you know, there's a nice 1976 Chevrolet Chevette on the side of the road. For months it sat there with the hatch open. Now the hatch is closed again. But yeah, I see a lot of cars that are, I kind of want to stop, you know, one road's got a pile of 240, 260, 280 Zs. I mean like 12 or 15 of them lined up next to the shop. And Jason's on there saying, I went by the Jack Daniels distillery. He knows the little place up there by, Holman, Decatur, Alabama, that's always had been full of kit cars and things. Yeah, back roads, that's just where it is. Plus,
and that's why you can't remember half your trip.
Well, anything that's more than about 45 minutes. Jack Daniels
distillery.
Thank you, Dave. You got it.
I said I was anything that's more than about 45 minutes. I always have a cigar, and I, you know, you crack the windows on the interstate, all the air conditioning gets sucked out and it's hot. It was nice having that cigar on that two lane road. You're just worried when you throw the butt out the window, burning down, creating a forest fire or something. No, I don't do that. I have an ash can in the car.
That's better.
Okay, I'll shut up and let you guys tell me how to cook.
Tell you guys the story of 12 hours in a 40 Buick. Okay, so, I mean, manifold cooking is definitely... Manifold cooking?
No, 12 hours in a 40 Buick.
Or 12 hours in a 40 Buick.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I used it as a title at one point. Yeah, no, it was great. I mean, and that was all back roads as much as we could make it until it got dark. And then we were like we're going to hit a deer. We need to get on the interstate. And then we were blasting as long as fast as we could go with our seal beam headlights, but that's a previous episode, isn't it? So manifold cooking is definitely a thing. And I was also thinking more broadly in terms of how people, you know, just eating on the road has evolved, right? Like, because there was a time when if you set off in an automobile, there was nothing to eat. You know, that's Derek's era where it's like him and his mud spattered duster and like whatever pickled eggs and stuff he's got in the hamper until he gets to the next town and can eat at the hotel train station or train, you know, that's associated with the train station and not with the highway. And then you get up into my era where it's like people are so wedded to their cars. They're like, what if we started serving them in their cars and the drive-in restaurant is invented? And that's where I got to this whole road food idea was like, I love to eat roadside food. Like, you know, White Castles are one of those things that started in this era, 1921. And like, I've got this whole recipe that I wrote about for Hemmings about the grilled onion burger that was developed during the Depression in this town called El Reno, Oklahoma, along Route 66. And it was like, what can we sell to people passing through who can't afford like a huge beef patty? It was like, what if we cut it with onions? And it ends up being really, really good, like better than a White Castle if you like White Castles. Jason asked who I am. So I'm an associate editor with Hemmings Classic Car. Means Motor News, all those magazines. I ragged on Derek, but yeah, I write for the whole organization. You can find my work online. I've done that for 9 years. And before that, I practiced law for 5 years. And like I said, I kept my law license, but that was a lot of taking money from people who didn't have much of it and giving it to people who already had a bunch of it. Kind of disheartening after a while. So I like doing car stuff now. So yeah. And then manifold cooking is like this whole thing that was from that era, like before these drive-in restaurants were invented. Because if you had, you know, most commonly you see them on Model Ts now, but theoretically you could work it on anything where you could get at the exhaust manifold. And it was this metal box that you like wrap your food really securely in foil. And my wife stressed this when we were talking about this episode. She's like, make sure that they tell them not to skimp on the foil because they'll regret it. They'll make a mess of their engine bay because sometimes you just cook foil right on, you know, the intake or wherever you can wedge this thing. And, you know, the more food you have, the hotter you have to get it through. And then the longer you have to drive or the hotter you have to keep your engine. Now, nice thing about modern engines is they run way hotter for emissions reasons than classic engines. So you don't necessarily have to have things right on the exhaust manifold. And you can cook, you know, as you can imagine, it's best to make like more liquidy things. Nice to meet you too, Jason. We'll get a full intro out of at some point, I hope.
Yeah.
I would go back to episode three.
What do you disagree with? That it's nice to meet me?
Yeah, but that too, yes. Cooking liquid, the more liquidious foods does work well. But, I mean, I've been on Model T tours where we've manifold cooked the dinners each night. And, you know, you can do hot dogs, you can do sausage, you can do things like that. Fairly easy in a manifold cooker. And then of course the sides are usually, like baked beans. And actually one of the best desserts I have ever had was on a Model T tour. And one of the couples that was on it, the wife, they actually, and for anybody interested in this, there's actually books. You can get reproductions of books that were written on manifold cooking in the teens and 20s. For people that were going to drive long distance in their car. And as Dave said, you don't have restaurants to stop at in the period. And so there were cookbooks. You would take your supplies with you and just like you would at home, certain time of day, get everything ready, put it on the manifold cooker and start cooking dinner for the family. But one of the ladies on the tour had basically taken a peach cobbler recipe that was in the book and tweaked it just a little bit with her own idea of what a peach cobbler should be. And hands down, the best peach cobbler I had ever had. It was amazing. So, I mean, I think it just depends on how used, you know, how comfortable, let's say comfortable you are with using a manifold cooker on what can, I mean, yes, high liquid foods like baked beans, things like that work really well because you can get them boiling and all that, but you can cook other stuff.
Well, sausages, especially pre-cooked ones like hot dogs, are really forgiving, which actually is a kind of a point that I was thinking about too, about stationary versus driving eating and how I think my pet theory is that this led to the ascendancy of the hamburger. Like, so, you know, like 1904 thereabouts, like the hot dog was the thing in America. Like that's what you ate at the ball game. That's what you ate at the fairgrounds. And by 1934, it's the other way around. Like everybody's eating hamburgers and cheeseburgers everywhere. And I think it's because it's the easiest food to drive with. Because, you know, the natural outgrowth of the drive-in restaurant and car hops, which literally comes from people hopping on your running board to hand you food, you wouldn't want to eat a hot dog because the toppings will all slide off and a burger is a much more stable kind of thing. And then that led me to talk about, you know, I once read a bunch of car crash statistics. And one of them was that, you know, eating, of course, is a major distraction while driving, yet we all do it. But some foods are way more distracting, like hot coffee and tacos. Like, don't ever get Taco Bell and try to drive around eating it because there's a lahar of cheese and meat coming to distract you.
Dave, we did that in college. You don't know lahar?
Or you think... Well, I know, but it was a bad idea. Don't do as I do as I say.
We were talking CRXs earlier and years ago, and we all know John except Jason. One of the girls I was dating with my 85 CRX insisted on having Taco Bell one night. I was still picking lettuce out of that car like a year later. So since I was 17 years old, tacos are forbidden in my cars. You know, I don't mind the cigarette or the tobacco from the cigars and that, but no tacos.
What about like, now I just blanked on the name of it. The one that's all like folded up. So you're supposed to be able to
burrito. Like,
No. The one it's basically like a giant taco. It's got it's got two hard shells that are flat. And then the crunch wrap. Thank you. Yeah. And it's all wrapped up, so it's supposed to be like you just eat it like a sandwich.
Anything that would be on the menu at a Taco Bell, it doesn't have to be a Taco Bell, but anything you could buy on the menu at a Taco Bell, with the exception of the drinks and the cinnamon crispies, no, you can't eat it in my car.
Yeah, so picky.
It's all the same picky. Five ingredients on everything, and they all self-destruct the minute you bite into them. So, yeah. Well, stick with burgers if you must drive around chowing.
When I went to Taco Bell a few weeks ago, just for the hell of it, and it costs $11 for one of their boxes. That's like the only fast food I've eaten this year. And No, I'm not going to do that. $11, I can go to a semi-decent restaurant.
So, yeah, well, we do a lot of cooking at home for that reason.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, so, you know, talking about manifold cooking, it's all, you know, well and good from the historic, you know, period of the early automobile. And of course, as Dave said, there weren't really restaurants quite yet, you know, intended for the traveler, right? Each town had some restaurants in it. Well,
just the railroad traveler.
Well, yeah, the railroads, that area. But, you know, as travel gets more and more popular, we start developing, you know, places for people to stop, things like that, which is why we have fast food restaurants today and all those various things. So I guess, you know, for a very long period of time, and there's a huge history, right? And Dave and John, you guys know this. There's a huge history behind the McDonald's philosophy, right? The whole idea of the reason fast food restaurants come about and what I always like to call the McDonald's philosophy, and I'm sure a few other people do as well, is that when you're driving across such a vast area, which the United States is huge when compared to other countries, the idea was you could get a hamburger in Ohio at a McDonald's, and you could drive to Oklahoma and stop at a McDonald's, and the hamburger would taste the same. You didn't have to, you know, the whole plan was we don't have to worry about people liking or not liking the food at different locations, right? You don't have a mystery of, oh, am I going to like this restaurant? Are they going to have good food? The idea was a McDonald's burger tastes like a McDonald's burger in Maine and in California, and a Burger King Whopper tastes the same in Florida as it does in Oregon, so on and so forth. And so I think, you know, the American traveler gets trapped in that for a long time. But I'm curious to know from you guys, and I know I have my take on it, which maybe I'll add in at the end, but when you go on a road trip today, and I think for John, Dave, myself, we're all in the same generation. And we probably grew up with parents that when we were on road trips, it often was the fast food stops. And maybe I'm wrong, Dave. You guys can tell me. But, you know, a lot of times it was, oh, just grab something quick at McDonald's or grab something quick at a Wendy's or whatever, because we got to get where we're going, blah, blah, blah. But if you guys take a road trip today, I'm curious to know what your mindset is on what you're going to eat along the way. Do you take food with you? Do you pre-plan? Because I think we all pretty much agree anymore. Fast food is terrible and hopefully on its way out in this world, but who knows? But do you pre-plan? Do you take food? Are there certain restaurants you try to stop at? Are there certain places you look for? Like, what is your mentality when you're on a road trip?
It would vary for me. When I'm doing, you know, I said many times, I travel 3,000 to 4,000 miles a month for work. And fortunately, my work has me stopping at, I'll say, a bunch of Walmarts and things like that throughout the day. So my eating is selecting things there that I can enjoy and have. I do not have a microwave for my car yet, but I do have a refrigerator. So not necessarily hot, but I can get things throughout the day. I absolutely despise, and sorry to my late grandfather in that, I despise making sandwiches and putting them in a cooler and taking them on a trip, et cetera, et cetera. It's nice, but I've just never been somebody like that. I want to stop and relax. I might hit fast food, but it's going to be either an Arby's or a Chick-fil-A. I couldn't tell you the last time I went into a McDonald's. I've been in a Taco Bell once, as previously mentioned, in the last 3 or 4 years. but I'm also not one that will necessarily stop at an unknown thing, because I'm not Howie Mandel, but I'm a bit of a germaphobe and I don't know what I'm going to walk into. And so it, and most of my trips anymore are well planned and I know where I'm going, so I can choose. And if it's a vacation trip, I don't know, because I don't do vacations, much to the disgust of my girlfriend.
All right, Dave.
Well, you know, yeah. So my travel varies based on who I'm traveling with, right? Because when I travel with the family, that's one thing and not something we do very often anymore. But when we were younger and our lives were different, we had a kid with an allergy. So we had to stop only at chain restaurants because they were the only people that could tell you what their allergens were on their menu. Like, can we eat here or not? Cause you know, we took her to a couple places and her eyes swelled up and stuff because she rubbed egg in her face. And like, you know, not a thing you want to put a kid through. Like, here, squalling baby, have a Benadryl, right? So I got into chains for that reason. Like, McDonald's is McDonald's everywhere, as you pointed out. And the chicken nuggets are chicken nuggets everywhere. Like, sometimes the McDonald's itself you don't want to go into because it's sticky and weird. But I've never gotten sick from it either. Now, when I travel for work, it's usually Wendy's because that's just, it tastes good. And I feel like it's a descendant of actually a hotel restaurant in Flint, Michigan, the Kewpie Burger. My grandmother used to talk about, she grew up in Flint back in the 20s and 30s. Whole nother.
Did you know Dave Thomas used to work for? Did you know Dave Thomas used to work for Colonel Sanders?
He used to work for Kewpie Burger. Yeah. I didn't know that, but Colonel Sanders is one of those guys who got started in a hotel court restaurant, speaking of road food. So KFC definitely is a legit claimant to that, because, you know, the classic, it happened one night tourist court where you got the restaurant and the office and all the little cabins out back. Ah, crap. I forgot to remind Disapproving Cat of our live stream because I had the message all teed up to send, and then I had some technical difficulty and got distracted. So it
was Disapproving Cat needs to subscribe.
Oh, and Jason had asked about.
I think
that's a good idea. Like and subscribe.
Yeah, I think we're having some.
Yeah, I've been kind of glitchy. I don't know if it's my end or.
Yeah, I think Dave's got a little bit of latency here, so let's forgive the over-talking tonight a little bit. And the longer pauses will not be in the audio podcast. I won't be able to remove those. Were you talking, Dave,
about Jason? I feel like every time I start talking, it's in the middle of somebody. There we go again.
How about I point
out? Yeah, Jason had mentioned accessory cookers. Okay. Hold up a D. Oh, that wouldn't help because there's two of us. Pulled up a W. So, yeah, Jason asked about accessory cookers, and there are still ones available today if you have a Model T or a Model A that bolt right onto certain places of the engine. But, you know, as truckers and others will attest, with a little bit of ingenuity and some good aluminum foil, you cook a lot of places. And those things are best served by non-liquidy recipes. I've heard tales of cans of beans exploding on exhaust manifolds, but you know, you got to remember to pop the top and then wire it down securely. I don't think the accessory craze that started in the 20s only sort of overlapped with the we have to picnic on the side of the road if we're going to eat on our road trip. So I'm not aware of a widespread market of cooking accessories beyond just that basic manifold cooker that's still reproduced. Do you know anything about that, Derek?
Yeah, I mean, there's not really that I know of any accessory cookers. I think some people have, like, or some companies have produced, like, modern versions to try to fit more modern vehicles that you can cook with. But, yeah, I mean, you can still buy, like, I can buy a manifold cooker to put on my 490 Chevy or, you know, any of the other cars, because they all pretty much, you've got to kind of bend the tab that hooks around the exhaust depending on what engine you have and how to make it fit. But yeah, I mean, those are, you know, those are very easy to get your hands on, even to this day. I believe Snyder's Model T parts carry the reproductions for a long time, probably still do. I haven't looked for one lately. I need to get one, though. I think the kids would love food cooked in a manifold cooker. They'd be all for that. But
I looked it up on Google. There are all kinds of manifold cooker companies. There's car manifold cooking accessories, and there's a PDF that has a list of them. I think I've seen a lot of things like that, whether it be manifold cookers or there's a turkey one that goes into the kind of the V area near the carburetor. I've seen people do stuff like on their catalytic converters, wrapping and then wire tying something to their cats so that it, not disapproving cats, but tying it to their cats and you're cooking that catalytic way. And then of course you get into modern. Like I said, I can get a microwave for my car now. You can get coffee pots for your car. I mean, it's not the rustic things that we're kind of alluding to here.
We were still talking engine accessories, not in car. My bad.
Well, I'm all over the place. But yeah, there seems to have been a whole market for them, finding them. How the world worked before 1950 is it was, you know, there was ingenuity and people would make things and people would fabricate things and didn't have to just necessarily go and get on Amazon and say, I want a car manifold cooker. And if Amazon doesn't have it, it must not exist. They would make it. So, yeah, I think in our answer to Jason's question, there were a lot. And they were universal. It's probably one of Jason, like you said, Snyder's J.C. Whitney catalog probably had stuff back in the day. Sears catalog definitely would have.
Yeah, they'll fit on basically any inline engine. You know, if it fits a Model T engine, it'd fit a 490 engine with a little tweaking. Disapproving cat called them hobo packets. And that reminds me, because it's the same as what we used to call hobo dinners, where you'd wrap up a meal and stick it in the ashes of the fire and let it cook in its own aluminum foil. And then I were going to recall my elementary school teacher talking about a cooking show in Phoenix, Arizona, or someplace where you put your raw ingredients in an aluminum foil pack in the morning, stuck it on the dash, and at lunch you had a piping hot meal because it cooked in the sun, just like frying an egg on the sidewalk down there.
Always make sure you cook something that smells delicious, because the smell will be in your car for a while. Yeah. So I'll jump in.
This car doesn't smell a little weird inside.
Yeah. So I'll jump in because Steve kind of talked about his plans for road trips. John talked a little bit about his, and you know, I should go back and revisit, because when I was a little kid, I do remember, you know, especially my dad grew up in a time where, number one, there were restaurants, you know, and things for their cross country travels, but they didn't have money. Yeah. My dad grew up extremely, extremely poor. So, you know, they were taking food with them. You know, they were making sandwiches on the side of the road. So, you know, even though we probably had much more money than my dad had growing up, I remember trips, the family camping trips, and Dave, you'll get this reference because you grew up in Michigan. We would always go camping, typically up at either Cadillac or Ludington in the parks there. And so, yeah, part of that would be driving on non-interstate, not highway. And we would take coolers with lunch meat and bread and make sandwiches on the side of the road, have potato chips, all of that. So we did that. Now that I'm older, I'm like John, I don't like all that. Christine does do some, my wife does some amazing packing, you know, for road trips with snacks and some foods and things. But for the most part, when, especially if we can travel non-interstate travel, I am always looking for the, you know, little kind of hometown restaurants, the hole in the wall place to stop and eat, because I love experiencing the food that this country has to offer. When you travel around and, you know, just seeing what these little towns have for restaurants is absolutely amazing. And the one thing that I told both of you guys, when this topic came up, in our discussions, was one of my favorite things to do. And I think it's getting less and less common. And I wish they were still out there, but I've been on a few road trips where I've been able to take some two-lane back roads, you know, avoiding interstates for whatever reason, and come through these little towns that still have an old root beer stand and make their own root beer and distribute it at, you know, like an old A&W, but they're just a local little homebrew root beer stand. And number one, root beer, how much better can you get? And to have kind of a homebrew is absolutely fantastic. So usually when I'm headed out on a road trip, if I can, I like to take the back roads and try to find hole in the wall places to stop and risk my health. No, just enjoy, you know, food that is not chain food. That's just where I like to fall.
Well, I agree. That's the ideal road trip. And that's actually pretty much akin to how I grew up road tripping. My parents were not fast food people. That was a rare treat growing up, but they did like, you know, local mom and pop restaurants. And that was always my preference, like I said, till the allergy kid thing kind of took that off the rails. And still, that's the best way to travel, especially combining back roads, if you've got the time, and better yet, the appropriate car. What is the most appropriate car, do you think, to drive while eating? And you can't say self-driving, that's a cop-out.
John, you got some?
My criteria is, what era are we talking?
John,
are we talking?
Quiet.
Yeah, I told you I'd be quiet through this topic. I'm not very experienced in that car. But what era car are we talking
Everybody
about?
Everybody needs.
Yes. But
well, this is you. I mean, you know, what do you want to drive? Where do you want to drive it? Are you screaming on the highway eating a burger at 90, 100 miles an hour? Or are you cruising the back roads like looking for a picnic spot at a Chevy 490?
No, I'm neither. I'm trying to think. Sporty car? No. I mean, a Miata, a Porsche, my Mini, things like that. No, I don't think those are good travel eating cars. Matter of fact, I don't know if I would say a lot of the new modern cars are good travel eating cars, because everything is slope. There's no flat surfaces. You do need to kind of be engaged. Yes, we have self-driving. We have lane assist. We have all of this, you know, radar cruise control to help us. I just trying to think as I'm going, the Camry doesn't work for it. Probably one of the best cars, I think, for driving and eating is a full-size pickup because of the center consoles, possibly a van. I loved having my conversion van. That's one I probably haven't brought up on this show before, but I had a 2001 Dodge Ram conversion van that had the little table in the center and everything, multiple cup holders. That was a nice vehicle to eat in and, you know, drive and, or eat while driving. But I'll be honest, I don't eat a lot while driving. I mean, I might grab a sub sandwich at Walmart and eat that, but normally I will eat in the parking lot or something. It's just one of those distraction things. I mean, I like when I drive, I like to pay attention to driving. I don't like to be distracted. So maybe it is that pull off.
Unless it's by a cigar.
A cigar, I mean, say I've been smoking and driving since 16. So it just, the product changed. But, you know, I used to do manual, like I said, used to do a manual transmission with a cell phone and a cigarette and, you know, drinking a beer and changing CDs and everything else at the same time. But back when we were, you know, young and dumb. Now, no. I mean, smoking a cigar or just relaxing. I can do two hands on the steering wheel. And so I don't know. I don't really, like I said, I don't have much of an answer there. I don't know. What would be a good car for you, Dave, to eat and drive?
I mean, something that I didn't mind dropping lettuce in, which is most cars that I own. I mean, my Corvair doesn't have any carpet. You know, it's, I keep it clean, but it's a lot easier to keep clean. And I don't sweat those kind of things. And I think it comes from having had kids for 17 years now, because it's impossible to keep a car clean, and I can't own something that I can't use all of the time, basically. So, yeah, I mean, the Corvair is kind of nice because it has a Power Glide, and most of my previous cars have been some kind of manual transmission, but I can juggle three on a tree and a double cheeseburger and a Coke between my knees. It's even the Cadillac doesn't have cup holders. It's the craziest thing. Although I think it was Chevrolet that once had said that the best cup holder is the one that sits beside you and wears a poodle skirt. But my wife doesn't wear poodle skirts anymore. But, you know, that is ideal. I think somebody said something about eating only in their wife's car. But, yeah, like I said, I got to own a car that I can basically shout or hose out if I want. So, you know, and I think about the 58 Cadillac Eldorado that had the magnetic tumblers that went on the glove box door, you know, because up to a certain point, all cars have this glove box door with the two drink impressions in it. And they're the 58 Eldorado that cost $10,000 back when that was real money, came with a magnetized tumbler. So I guess your whiskey glass, it might slosh in the corners, but wouldn't slide off.
The shot glasses were also the shot glasses were also magnetized to sit on the glove box door too. I know somebody who's got one of those.
I will say that growing up on the farm, you know, the grain trucks were always great to eat in, you know, because when you're moving from field to field or from the field to the grain bins back at the farm, you know, they're just tooling along in the farm, the grain truck, great time to eat a bologna sandwich. I never had a problem. So yeah, but I'm kind of with Dave. I'm thinking like if I had to really, really pick, I'd probably run somewhere in the early to mid 60s. You know, something like my 61 Ford Falcon, or Dave knows about a wonderful road trip I got. And I think I talked about it on the show here after it happened, but a wonderful road trip I got to take from Florida to Kentucky in a 66 Ford Mustang. You know, that was, I can just, there's just something about those cars that they're just kind of comfortable enough that it just feels right. Right. You're just kind of, you know, maybe you're in, you know, a three on the tree, you're in high gear, you know, you stop, you get your food, get it set there on the bench seat next to you. Got the drink between your knees. You get going, you get on the highway, you get it in high gear, you're cruising in the slow lane. You're just cruising and it's perfect. Like there's room to move around, grab the food, eat fries. Again, my Falcon, like Dave's Corvair, rubber floor mat. Psh, who cares? Drop something, wipe it out. No carpet gets stained. So I think I'm kind of with Dave here. I like early to mid 60s. you know, small family car, something like a Falcon, Corvair, you know, type vehicle. I think that's probably the perfect eat on the road car. That would be my pick too.
Probably no coincidence that's the height of the drive-in restaurant era, right? Before the drive-thrus took over later in the decade in the 70s.
You know, speaking of the drive-ins, Dave, so to go back to Jason's question earlier as well about who the heck is Dave, which, I mean, does anyone really know who any of us are? But on top of everything Dave said, Dave and I also attended college together. That's where we met and became acquaintances. And, you know, but we also may or may not have, depends on if there's any legal cases still pending, started a car club together at the college we attended. And we used to meet at the drive-in in Mount Pleasant. And I can't remember the name of it. What was the name of the drive-in there that we would hang out at? Do you remember?
The one that served Verner's. I was going to say the Pixie, but that's not it. That's at the other end of town. Disapproving Cat went there too. Uncle John's.
Was it Uncle John's?
Yep. So Michigan, they had Verner's.
Yeah, I guess it was Uncle. Yeah, that is right. Is,
if a disapproving cat says it, I believe it. He was like Mr. CMU.
Yeah, right.
I did look at the chat. The club is not still active that I know of, but
they
put on that one good show and then rode off into the sunset.
Yep.
Disapproving said it was just John's.
Oh,
not Uncle John's.
He says, no, just John's. John's drive-in.
Well, you're the one that said it was Uncle John's to start, so you can't be yelling at Dave for not reading the chat.
Yeah, because Disapproving Cat lied to me.
I'm
blaming the lag.
He said he was just there today. It's still open? I didn't know that. I've not been back to Mount Pleasant in decades.
And they're very appreciative of that.
Oh, exactly.
I haven't been back to Michigan in 9 years.
I used to hang out at a drive-in called Lou's and back in Peoria. And I don't know if I'm allowed there anymore. I backed into somebody accidentally and didn't know I did.
The drive-in in Happy Days?
Might have been. It was Al's. Lou's drive-in on... Al's was on Happy Days. No, I was there eating, got mad Al's at Lou. Kenosha.
That's right.
Got mad at Lou and backed out and hit a tempo with my CR, with the same CRX, and didn't even know it. Got out to my girlfriend's house and I got a phone call. And my dad said, were you in an accident? And I said, no. He goes, you better go look at your car. And I went out and looked and I broke a taillight. And I said, I guess I was. And he goes, well, you need to get to the police station. So I went to the police station. I backed into a Ford Tempo, hit the rear wheel, totaled the Tempo, broke the taillight in the CRX. Wow. I guess I probably should thank Dad for getting me out of that jam too.
You know, the Tempo Topaz has a connection to the Ford Falcon.
I could see that.
Are you going to enlighten us?
I think he locked up. I think we lost Dave for a minute.
Oh. I'm back. Can you hear me now?
Yes, you're on Verizon. We're good.
Okay. So, good. Yeah, the Tempo connection is that four-cylinder in those cars was derived from the Falcon 6, so the pistons actually fit, and it's a good way to get a flat-top piston in a Falcon 6-cylinder.
Ooh, I didn't know that. I like.
If you can find
it. It's the 200, not the 144. I'm sorry, Derek. But
I've got
those pistons newer. You could a couple of years ago anyway.
Yeah, well, I've got a 144 in the car. I've got a 200 sitting in the garage waiting to possibly go in it.
Oh, nice.
Well, that's a good place to have a motor if you're going to put tempo pistons in it. And what a thing to say at the car show. Hey, check out my Falcon. I upgraded. It's got flat top tempo pistons in it. I don't know which
one's worse. That's just for the parts guy to get you the pistons.
Have you seen the meme where the guy walks into the parts shop and or parts store and goes, I need to get a clutch, and the guy behind the counter responds, is that an automatic or a manual?
Yep. that's not bad.
We do have good parts stores around here.
Yeah, that's not that far off. I had a friend here in Bowling Green go into a parts store that he normally used, and the new kid was behind the counter. And he walked in, he looked at the kid, he said, I need to get a condenser. And the kid looked up at him and said, we don't sell air conditioning parts here.
I mean, that's not a fair interpretation of what he said.
It's like the little video with Nick Offerman when he as Ron from Parks and Rec, where he's in Home Depot and the guy comes up, can I help you? I know more than you.
Yeah.
You're just...
Just turn the.
Well, I feel grateful that the parts stores around here are good. They can't get what you want.
Jason, that's a reasonable question because maybe the all-wheel drive adjust has something that's in the way. I mean, some of these cars, you know, you do remove the front clip and take out the spare tire, take off the right rear door to change a headlight. $37 for one headlight's also cheap, Derek or Jason.
Yeah, no kidding.
We exhausted our food conversation.
I think we might have, unless Dave has something else to add to the topic.
I'm just so laggy, I'm afraid to say.
Yeah. We all go through those nights. You know, I have my internet issues. Like I said, a couple of episodes ago, I think the first show you were on, Dave, that here I am with thousands of dollars of broadcasting equipment and Derek with his $60 mic and $12 headphones is basically never had a problem other than just being mono. But
hey, you know what? It's like the cars I like to collect. You buy the cheap stuff that nobody cares about. It's the easiest to work on, and it usually runs all the time.
Yeah, see, I do have one of those mics here too, Derek, just like you're using. But no, I got to be all complicated.
My philosophy on buying stuff is always buy what's got the best parts availability. Basically, whatever was most popular when it was new. Because I'd find stuff for it.
And Derek, there you go. You got your answer to your lighting.
I'm getting compliments on the lighting tonight. God, I'm doing great. Actually, I got a new computer, but I've been using it for a few months on the show now. But I do have a new ring light, and for the last few weeks, I have been playing with its location and setup. And you also may have noticed. We changed the background. We've had to rearrange some stuff in the house. We now have a bookcase in this office. And so it might be helping with the background being a little darker.
I think the background darker has helped tremendously.
It's the background's now
darker. The camera on my extremely cheap laptop is not good.
We can set you up, Dave. If you need anything, just let me know. I've got stacks of stuff here. microphones, headphones, cameras.
Yes, disapproving cat. I can barely read your comments, but God, do I look good.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I have two 32-inch monitors in front of me that are white, and I can't put them in a dark mode, so I look like a ghost on this thing. I have to start doing makeup for the show. And I don't have the full facial hair of Barry.
Well,
yeah, I could be the orange guy.
Gotta look good.
I always look good. Rather look good than feel good.
It's like, you know, driving a, you either want to drive a slow car fast or nothing at all. Right?
I like driving my slow car slow.
Yeah. You know, disapproving cat, I am, I like that you say with a yellow.
Just as long as it's not driving a fast car slow.
Exactly.
I've got LEDs. I'll put some yellow tint on it and see if that helps there. But I'm looking at some screen covers, but I just don't want to spend as much as I did on the monitors to put a cover over them to dim them.
So can I bring something up that's been kind of rubbing me the wrong way this week? And it is automotive related and it's internet related. Seeing we've exhausted the Road Eats topic and we're now just talking about lighting and podcasting.
Well, usually the last 10 minutes we are way off topic anyway. So
remember when we used to have that, what was it we called it? The weekly bitch or whatever. Remember when we did that for a short moment?
Yes.
Or as in the South, you would say a hot minute.
It's like the 2 minutes of hate.
Yeah, pretty much. So. And now I cannot remember the second thing I was going to play. Well, a few weeks ago, I complained about these stupid short videos, reels, whatever they're called, where guys are in a paint booth painting a part, either a fender or something, and they get the freaking runs all over it. And I don't get why they do it.
The wrong.
But my next, this complaint, and it seems to be just getting worse, and I get it that everybody's making money on these shock value videos and all this stupid stuff that's going around the internet, but this Whistle and Diesel guy that's out there, I don't know if either of you have ever seen any of his footage, but he was in Tennessee for some reason at some point, I don't know, probably within the last month or two. And for that reason, it popped up in my feed because of this algorithm of, you know, where I live and all this stuff. And he was driving a replica of the General Lee, except for it had a drag parachute out the back. He lives in Tennessee. Oh, good. Now I'm really going to get into it. I didn't know.
That video started in Georgia.
Oh, it started in Georgia. Okay.
And then he went to Nashville.
Who in his right mind, I don't know if you saw this or not, Dave, clearly John did, but he was driving down the interstate, and when he went by a cop, he would intentionally deploy the chute on the interstate with other traffic. I'm sorry, that kind of crap has to stop. That's ridiculous. I don't know. I'm just frustrated by it. Like, talk about risking people's lives, putting other people in danger. It was absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah. And at the very beginning, he showed him getting stopped once. And that guy just kind of joked with him and let him off.
That is definitely the rest of the video. He did this in front of the police?
He would seek out police. And he would honk at him and do whatever he could to get their attention. And no cop would respond. And of course, he's got cameras on the car and he's got a chase car with filming him. But yeah, I totally agree with Derek. I mean, he's got buckets of YouTube money and, you know, he probably talked to his lawyer. And the worst that's going to happen is you're going to, you know, get a fine and you might lose your license for a little bit. But is there really a law on the books that says you can't deploy a parachute on the street? Probably isn't. Yeah, I can
imagine there's some more generic laws that could apply.
Well, the one cop said deploying it, that the one that actually stopped him and he was giving him the warning, said deploying it blocked his taillight so vehicles behind him could not tell if he was braking. The other thing is, is it an unsecured load? Because it's behind the vehicle and it's a black parachute. If it's a red parachute, you know, it's like putting a, you know, having a 12-foot 2x4 in your 4-foot, you know, Ford Maverick bed, and you know, put a red flag on the end of it to say that this is way behind you. He went around a corner and the chute was deployed, but he wasn't going fast enough for it to inflate. And it swung out and almost hit the cars in the turn lane, you know, as he turned. Some of this YouTube stuff is flat stupid. And I mean, we could have better results on our YouTube if we started naming everything 10 things we hate. We could have probably should have named this episode 10 things we hate about eating on the road, you know?
and
then maybe we cover it. But that's one of the big catch titles, things you hate. You wonder why the world's the way it is.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's just, and Dave, look, if you haven't heard of him,
engagement bait. This,
yeah, don't look him up, because he'll get more views, and then the algorithm will start feeding you more crap like that. I mean, I'm fortunate. I have never seen a Mr. Beast video. Now that I set it in front of all this electronic stuff, my YouTube will be all Mr. Beast. Mm-hmm. But yeah, these people they're young. They get. You know, they're making tons of money and they aren't responsible enough to have it. So I'm sorry, I'm just talking like an old man.
But no, I mean, but you can have examples out there. And, you know, I'm going to bring it up because, you know, we've had talks about her on the show before, but obviously there's the Supercar Blondie, you know, network or whatever it is now that she has. And granted, she didn't start out as someone that really knew cars well. She's grown into it. She talks about what she appreciates about the cars, and she's grown to be very successful without endangering other people. Whistling Diesel, all he does is destroy things and put other people at risk. Like, I'm sorry. And once you take it out on the interstate highway, you should be done. There's no excuse for that in my opinion. And I mean, does that mean I'm a little old man? Okay, fine. Get off my lawn. But I'm sorry. Like, even when we were kids, I didn't put other people's lives at risk doing something. Like, I knew better than to do that. Right. I mean, that's just something where you should know better. You shouldn't do something intentionally that could hurt, maim, or kill someone.
I'm not saying it's an excuse, but it's 16 and 17. Yeah, I did some really stupid stuff driving. And by the time I was in my early 20s, I learned. And I mean, I got a ticket for driving on a suspended license. And I was in court with a ticket for driving on a suspended license. And the judge said something to me and he said, okay, we're going to go ahead and dismiss this. And I said, well, I got this other one. And he goes, what? So the one that was issued by the state cop, you know, so I did some stupid stuff. But after that, I think since I turned 22, maybe 23, I've had 3 traffic stops. And, you know, it's just something you learn and you grow up. But when you throw $10,000, $15,000, $50,000 a month at a 22-year-old that's because he did something stupid, you're rewarding him for doing something stupid. And it's going to be interesting if Whistling Diesel kills somebody. What liability does YouTube have to that? You know, they're paying him to create that content. I mean, it's not like Fear Factor with Joe Rogan where everything's all looked at legally before they do it. He's going to do something, or somebody's going to do something that's going to create serious damage. And I guess, you know, we're on YouTube, we're YouTubers as much as anybody else. We're just not as popular. So yeah, I go with you, Derek. I don't want to end on a down note there on the whining and crying.
Well, I don't really care because how we end, because I think it's absolutely ridiculous. I saw the video this week and this is no driving gloves. We're here to talk about automotive stuff and it's automotive. Most of what he does is related to the automobile on his YouTube channel. And most of the time, all it is destroying cars. He's destroyed a Model T with a crane.
Destroyed the Cybertruck.
Destroyed a Cybertruck. He burnt a Ferrari in the middle of a wheat field or whatever.
And burned down the wheat field.
Freaking ridiculous. Yeah, caught the wheat field on fire. I'm sorry. It's just all ridiculous.
They used to stage executions of elephants and crash locomotives into each other head on. We're just doing it. I think it just is such a more rapid rate because there's not enough to just stage one locomotive crash anymore. Everybody's satisfied for a few years. You've got to do it all the time if you want to monetize it properly. And yeah, that's something that definitely goes beyond YouTube. And if anybody's got any ideas how to solve that, write your congressman.
Unfortunately, Jason, when it's fed to you by the algorithms of Facebook and YouTube and all of that, because you're in the automotive field and doing all this, unfortunately, you do have to become familiar with this content. And in my opinion, I want to talk about it on the show and have these exact opinions. So yeah, I'm going to look at a couple of his episodes and think this is ridiculous and mention it on the show because that's what we're here to do.
Yeah. He just always pops up every now and then. It's like, I fall asleep watching something and I wake up and something, how the heck did we get from this to that? But I don't understand YouTube algorithms. If I did, we would have a lot more people in the chat room, but we're real happy tonight with all the participation. The comments, the picking on us, my absent-mindedness from earlier in the show and not being great on the core topic. Is there anything else from Derek or Dave? And otherwise, we're going to probably wrap it up here and we'll be back next week with another exciting episode of No Driving Gloves. Derek, Dave.
Thanks for having me, guys, and hopefully I'll be less laggy next week. Hello, Neil.
Yes, and that's exactly what I was going to say. Guys, thanks for joining us tonight here on No Driving Gloves. We always appreciate it, and we are grateful for the No Driving Gloves community. Remember, if you guys want to help us out, you can click on the wonderful QR codes in the corners of the screen here, and that will let you buy us a coffee or two or the 500, whatever you want to do. That helps the show. And obviously, if you want to see the show get bigger, if you want to see the No Driving Gloves community get bigger, then there's one thing you can do that really helps us, and that is help us grow, share the show.
And with that, it's time to get off your ass, go burn some gas, because we are out.